You're listening to a free show on WrestlingObserver.com, the leaders in news and inside information on both professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. To learn how to subscribe and get immediate access to hundreds of past newsletters written by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as thousands of hours of podcasts and interviews, go to bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. That's bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster of the site. Also, former writer for Fight Magazine, Bloody Elbow, Bleacher Report, and a bunch of other websites that no longer exist. Hopefully, you guys are enjoying a really fun week and have some good plans for the weekend coming up. There's a little bit of UFC action happening in Brazil, which we'll talk about at the close of the show. But this is a really special show for me. I'm really psyched because we got on a guest I've been trying to get on for like 6 months. I think it feels like 6 months. It's Cort Bauer. Cort Bauer. He of MLW, MLWRadio.com, and executive producer for Combate Americas. I like my Latino accent there. And also for, what else am I thinking? Oh, he's a former WWE Creative guy, of course. He's been on these airways before on Dave and Brian's show. And I wanted to have him on, just kind of talk about a lot of stuff all over the board. And it's a little bit shorter conversation than we usually have. It was a half an hour because Cort is pretty busy, and we'll get him, catch up with him another time. But we packed a lot into 30 minutes. We talked a little bit about Combate Americas. We talked about MLW Radio and kind of how that's come together and some of the challenges he's had and some successes that he's had running a paid content website, primarily focusing on audio. I don't know if you've heard of those before, but they do exist. And also some WWE. And we talked a little bit kind of grading some of the experiences so far, or some of the how WWE has done with certain talents like Nakamura. We talked a little bit about Samoa Joe and so on. Didn't really kind of get grades for each of them, but it's kind of transitioned into a bigger conversation, which was fun. And also, I got Cort's thoughts on how WWE introduced the Cruiserweights on Monday, which you want to stick around for as well. So without further ado, we're going to get to this interview with Cort Bauer of MLWRadio.com and Combate Americas. Well, our guest this week is no surprise, well-known name to everyone here in WrestlingObserver.com. He's the co-executive producer of Combate Americas, a Latino-inspired MMA fight promotion on Fight Pass. He's also the creator of Major League Wrestling and MLWRadio.com, past member of WWE Creative, and you know him very well from this site. We head to New York to talk to the one and only Cort Bauer. In Cort, the tough questions that I have to start out with. Yeah, the hold on to your seat question is, okay. Was part of the deal in getting Ric Flair to MLW Radio that you had to pick up his bar tab for a night?
That might have been in the contract. We had a few stipulations. I might have to be quiet on that one. But yes, that was a great get for us. Rick, we actually started talking about doing something months prior. I mean, I think maybe March. And we didn't close the deal until basically minutes before we recorded the final MLW podcast with Conan. Then we tagged that on at the end. And that was like the start of our new era. And then quickly over the summer, we went on to add a lot of interesting acts, including Bruce Pritchard and Tamatanga came aboard, Marty and Sarah. So it's been crazy just to see how this little thing that was just basically going to be a podcast for about 15 weeks. I was just going to interview old MLW alumni, turned into something else. So it went from like a activation strategy for selling some old DVDs to this whole like viable business with podcasting, and we have sponsors. It's blown me away.
Yeah. One of the fascinating things about kind of seeing this from the outside is that you have just kind of grown up this podcast network over time. And as you mentioned, I was looking over the roster today. At what point in your mind did it turn from that, I'm going to say vanity project, but kind of that shift? Like what was there a certain thing that happened, a certain key that turned, something that clicked, all of a sudden you're like, you know what, I'm going to try this as a paid content network?
Yeah, it was a gradual thing. Like I said, it was really it wasn't a vanity project. I really resisted this. Mr. St. Laurent's like, listen, let's sell these old DVDs. We'll interview Sanjay Dutt, C.W. Anderson, Carino, whoever from MLW, and sell some of the old DVDs, clear out the old warehouse, and then call it a day. And within a few weeks, we went from that strategy to, well, maybe we can sustain this, and what are the next steps? And we started to look at that, and that went to doing a premium subscription service, to doing live events in San Jose, Dallas, and then next year in Orlando, to doing a whole portfolio of podcasts, you know, with Jim Cornette, who was a big get. I mean, that really gave us a huge boost when Jim came aboard. And then we just continue to grow and grow. You know, we introduced different acts like Kevin Sullivan, all these interesting people that hadn't been, in a lot of cases, overexposed doing podcasts and stuff. And then they had an interesting perspective, and they had their own way of wanting to do the show. And we really try to give them that freedom and that autonomy over what they put out there. And it's been infinitely more viable than running a wrestling company, the old MLW. I think most people that listen now have no idea that it was actually this little wrestling company that ran 10 shows and, you know, 12, 13 years ago. In fact, I don't even know if people know what the initials MLW stand for. If I had this strategy from day one, I probably wouldn't have called it MLW Radio. It would have been called something else, but that's just how it ended up. And I like to think that a lot of our podcasts really are major league when you look at the talent. I mean, they've been there, they've done it, they've accomplished it, they've been at the highest levels, whether it's in the ring or in the office, and they all have unique perspectives. And some shows are for some people and some shows are for other people, so you have a nice variety. You have people like Marty DeRosa, a great comedian, along with Sarah Shockey, and they have a fun take on what they do. And then you have, you know, a guy like Kevin Sullivan, who booked Florida, he booked out in Japan, he booked territories and WCW at its height. And then you have Rick and Corny, and just and then you have writers, you know. So it's like some of the podcast hosts probably hate the writers, and some of the writers probably hate some of the other, you know. So it's a dysfunctional family in a way, but it's also a lot of fun because the fans win. It's a buffet of different content, so may not be for everyone, but there's a show there that you'll probably love, and hopefully there's a lot of shows you'll like.
So it reminds me a lot of I talked a few years ago to Norm Pattis, who oversees Podcast One. Westwood One. I did a story when they really started exploding into the wrestling podcast market. They had I think it might have been around the time they were introducing I don't know if it was the Goldberg Show or the Jericho Show or the Ross Report. One of the ones where basically, I mean, they started to kind of build out this library. And one of the big questions is, of course, you know, how do you make money off this? And their approach was, they did the revenue split where, and what I thought was really smart about it was it incentivized the host to actually go out and promote the show and really be invested, and not just have a thing kind of just this is one of like eight things that they do. Do you have something similar to your talent, and how do you incentivize them to kind of get out there and do that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the industry standard is you're partners, just like on our premium content. We are partners with Jim Cornette. We are partners with Alex Greenfield, who is the writer of MSL. We are partners. If you put out content that's premium and you're marketing it, you're going to be rewarded because you get a cut of that action. And the same goes for the advertising. We split that and work. You know, I'll be honest, and it blew me away that I was able to do it, but I was able to put together a better deal to get Ric Flair than CBS could to retain him.
Wow.
Or Podcast One. And it took, like I said, we started in March and we didn't get to the finish line until I think July 1st at like some crazy hour, but we got it done. And it's, you know, we're not that big company that has a big infrastructure like Norm does in Beverly Hills. I mean, I've been to that office. It's an impressive office in Beverly Hills. We don't have that kind of infrastructure with all these, all the staff and everything, and state of the art equipment. We're very grassroots. You know, we are kind of like this weird wrestling tech startup in this non-traditional way. The advertising and bringing in a sales team this summer really, it allowed us to bring it, to get Ric Flair. You know, it allowed us to rapidly expand over the summer and also reward those that had been along with us when, you know, it was a little bit leaner, and now have the opportunity to have partners. We have pre-rolls, we have live reads, you know, we have had anyone and everyone from Sam Adams as a pre-roll sponsor to, you know, doing live reads for Mack Weldon and Blue Apron. And we're going to have Omaha Steaks joining us soon. So we're starting to get into some really cool blue chip advertising in terms of the podcasting end of the world. I 2 years ago, I would have said I tried and I couldn't get it done. But now I have a great sales team here in New York, and they're doing amazing work for all of our shows. So it makes my job easier, but makes me look good, which is awesome.
So one of the big challenges, something that we know and everyone knows when they're getting into the paid content realm, is how do you incentivize people to pay for something that they're so used to getting for free? And it's crazy because, you know, people have to produce this stuff. There's right. time for the talent, all this stuff, and just the way the internet's been the past, you know, decade or so, with this kind of everyone's trying to figure out what the right model is and getting people to pay. What's been some of the biggest challenges that you faced in that? And granted, you know, MLW is not a large cost by any means,
right?
But what have been some of the, you know, some of the challenges you've had and some of the successes, and how have you overcome them?
It's really been, I mean, we've gone through a few like growth spurts, and this summer we've blown away our numbers and into the fall now. Like I was just going over this with St. Laurent last night. We're like looking at all the data. I'm like, oh my God, like, holy crap. It's really rapid growth. And the challenges really hasn't been about, you know, how do you get people to subscribe? It's like, listen, if you want more content, it's here. It's $1.99. We're not going to try to oversell you on it. If you stumble upon it, awesome. We don't give you the hard sell. If you want more of us, if you get so into the personalities, you want to hear more from me or St. Laurent or Corny or Matt Farmer, who I do History in the Making with, come on over. Because we try to give them value. And I think, you know, if you look at a lot of people, they try to do the opposite. They'll try to get you in for a higher price. You know, not $1.99 isn't that bad. You know, we have to, of course, then split that cut with our content partners on the other end that take care of our subscription service, which is, you know, one of the things that down the road we want to address and maybe bring that in-house now that we can do that. But when we started, we couldn't. So, you know, there's not like the listenership. It's been so organic and grassroots, and we've never really marketed the show. People find it and they like it. And, you know, we have guys like Ric Flair, who has like 700, 800,000 Twitter followers. Just Rick tweeting about his show gets a lot of listeners in, you know, heightens awareness for his show, our shows, and all boats rise with the tide, and that's happened this fall as well.
Yeah, one of the other projects you're working on is Combat Day Americas, which is again, I talked about the open. It's a Latino inspired, really Latino focused MMA promotion. It's on UFC Fight Pass and also some other providers as well. How did you first get involved with it's Campbell McLaren, right?
Yes, Campbell McLaren, yeah. Co-creator of the UFC. I was introduced to him about 5 or 6 years ago by Frank Shamrock. We were working on a project with Showtime, and we just thought it'd be cool to interview the co-creator of the UFC. He was in New York. I'm in New York. Frank was in New York for the shoot, along with Mauro Ranallo. And I got to talking to Campbell, and it turns out we are literally neighbors. We live I could walk to his house in 2 minutes. And I had no idea the co-creator of the UFC lived around the block.
No kidding.
Westchester, New York's a funky place. You know, Paul Heyman's here. Freddie Blassie lived here. And, of course, Arnold Scholland and Tommy Dreamer. It's quite the eclectic neighborhood or county, so to speak. Very small little county here as a suburb in New York. And so Cam and I started talking. And a few years ago, he started kind of explaining the concept. He was kind of just still trying to shape and mold what he was doing with the vision. And then, lo and behold, he did the reality show with Daddy Yankee and Hoist Gracie, and actually Blue Demon was in it. And then he went and started doing live fights last September. And here we are a year later, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's going to be a huge fall for the company. I mean, it's going through real big growth, and it's been great to be a part of another startup. And I love MMA. I've worked with different companies in the past, and it's great to work with Campbell on this. It's a lot of fun to see it starting to really become something big. We sold out in LA back-to-back shows, and it's been cool because it also has like a real, for wrestling fans, it's cool because there's a weird crossover. You know, we had Conan announce a show for us for NBC. Alberto Del Rio hosted the first show and was actually doing live commentary for it. Rey Mysterio was going to be involved, but then he had a contractual issue with Lucha Underground. We've had a lot of wrestlers come out to the show. We had John Morrison, Taya come out to our LA show just as fans, and they walked the red carpet and everything. They were sitting cage side. So it's cool because it's one of the MMA companies that actually loves having wrestlers come out. It's just actually talking to Bobby Fish, who lives here in New York, say, hey, you should come out to our show. We're doing a show in New York, actually, in a few weeks, the first show back in New York, October 14th at Turning Stone Casino and Resort. And I said, you should come out. And so, you know, we'll have a little bit of a wrestler representation at the show, probably. I don't know if Bobby's going to make it, but I'm working on some guys because I think it's fun to have that crossover. I think when you're watching UFC and you see Steve Austin, Jim Ross, all those guys there, it's kind of fun to see that. And Campbell loves wrestling. He really respects it. A lot of promoters are like, oh, that's the phony stuff. Screw that. he has a real affinity for it because he loves the showmanship of it. He knows they know how to sell you on an event, on a fight. He respects the hustle. And so it's been a lot of fun, and there's always something new to do, a new challenge. So for me, it's fun. I get bored very quickly. That's why, yeah, I move around a little bit from different companies. I get bored very quickly. So for me to work here and have new challenges every day is like, it's good for me. I get a little stir crazy if I don't have something new every day.
Right. So, I mean, there is a challenge there in that obviously these days with so much UFC and MMA content in general on TV, available on Fight Pass. I mean, with general content, there's so much available at someone's fingertips at a single time. What's your pitch for why people should turn their attention towards Combate Americas?
It reminds me a lot of the old WEC. You know, you have a lot of great bantamweight fighters at 135. It's a smaller cage, and they're really, the action's nonstop. You know, you're not there. The guys aren't humping each other on the mat.
Yeah.
It's not that lay and pray thing. They really are hungry guys. They're really, and they're all fresh faces, you know. And I think they have like that next gen approach, and they work their asses off. Like Kira Vitar is a great example. She's 4'11". She's like the Rey Mysterio of the company. She's an atom weight, and she, to pass the guard, she did a not a handstand. What do you call it? I'm terrible with this. A cartwheel. To pass the guard in one, yeah, of her fights. She used to be a cheerleader. She did the cartwheel to pass guard. And it was such a great spot. And I'm like, man, as a cheerleader, that, like, this was, if I was working this, that's what I would tell you to do, because, you know, your whole background, your gimmick is that you're a cheerleader. And so she's done a great job. She's like 3-0 in Combate America. She's fighting this Sunday in Japan, representing the company in Ryzen, which is the predecessor essentially to Pride.
Yeah.
And so she's in deep water. They're facing a badass judo fighter who, she's like 125. So she, you know, you're talking about atom weight, and then this like, she's like the big Van Vader in her division. They're going to meet in the middle, I think at 115, something like that. So she's going over there. Campbell's over there. A lot of the crew's over there to support her. But they're running the Saitama Super Arena, which of course was Pride's old turf. So it's cool to see different fighters do unique things that you wouldn't see in other organizations here. So, I mean, there's that young energy, there's that cutting edge aspect of how they're fighting, the unorthodox style, and they have cool stories too. And that's part of what I'm here to do as our TV presence grows, and it will into 2017, is be able to whip everyone into a frenzy, whether it's for the rivalries, but also get to know the fighters and their journeys. And very similar to wrestling, get these guys over with their personalities as much as we need to, as well as in the cage, where they do a lot of their work to getting over. So it's a lot of fun. It's different challenges than in wrestling in terms of how you present talent or book talent. It's almost like retro marketing them in some cases, or trying to get the story out and turn it into something that's going to be compelling TV, but also relatable in a lot of cases. So it's a lot of fun, and I'm learning. Every day I'm learning something new, and I love it.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the wrestling MMA hybrid story that was CM Punk's MMA debut, UFC debut. From soup to nuts, start to finish, what did you make of everything? What was your key takeaways, I guess, from everything involved in this 21-month run?
You know, I look at it two ways. First, he missed out on his prime earning years in pro wrestling working for WWE, and you can't ever replicate that. You have a short window to make a lot of money. And when you're 50, you're still having to pay bills, and you're probably not going to still be making that same money. You know, people think, you know, stars that made money for big money for a year or two in 1999, as an example, are still rich and rolling in it today. That's not the case. You have to pay taxes. You sometimes get a divorce. You know, all these issues that come up as part of life. So for him to take this detour, and we now know what was at least what he was paid for the fight, and he probably got a piece of the pay-per-view, and you can kind of figure out that math. Still, you know, it was an interesting, unorthodox detour from his career trajectory as a wrestler. And he seems like he's really has closure on pro wrestling. And he's now in this space. That fight, it was hard to watch. You know, it was hard to see this guy. I mean, I was rooting every time he got out of the rear naked choke and went two minutes and changed 2.5. I wanted to see him. I knew he wasn't going to probably win, but I wanted to see him at least not get dropped in 9 seconds or something. And it was admirable what he did. You know, UFC, of course, they kind of pulled one of the famous classic moves from Pride is bringing a celebrity and do it. And they popped their show. And it was a good business decision for them. For Punk, it was a bucket list item, and he made some money. Where does this go? It probably goes to another fight. And where does that go from there? Maybe he becomes an on-air personality. There's worse things in the world. I think he could do great in different capacities. I think he'd be great doing some of their lifestyle content. And they're always trying to amass more content. And for CM Punk also, it's a great time to be a part of the UFC with Ari Emanuel now at the helm. That could open other unique doors. So I think for him, he's able to touch things that he's always wanted to do in his mid-30s, be it write for Marvel and do the Drax comic or do MMA and touch that world. And because wrestling, you know, when you love it and you're passionate and you're that passionate about it like he was, when you lose that passion, that light goes out. It is one of the worst feelings, and it's a very painful feeling. And I don't think people have realized, you know, he went through it. And then there's the layer of legalities that he's going through with WWE. It's a hard process because it's like probably been how he defined himself for most of his life, and to now go through that process and get closure. It's healthy, but also it's a hard process. And seems like, you know, he's in a better place now than he's probably been in years. So he takes the unconventional route, which is classic Phil Brooks, I guess. And, you know, we'll see how he does in another fight, but in the long term, I think he'll be more serviceable for UFC in a broadcast position. I mean, I'm not saying play-by-play or analyst like Joe Rogan. No one could be
personality,
Joe.
Yeah.
But yeah, but you know, talking head kind of thing. He'll be interesting to you. I mean, you could also do lifestyle stuff where he's like, "Hey, I'm in the trenches with this guy. We're going to go get some tattoos today," you know. And I think he could be very charming in that role. And I think there's a book he could write, and I think that book would be a bestseller. Just about his life, but he probably has to get through a few legal entanglements before he gets there to make sure that's all copacetic.
So I know we have a few minutes left, but I did want to ask you, why don't you give a couple grades for a couple guys in WWE since they've made their way to Titan Towers, so to speak, and kind of what your opinion is. And again, a grade of so right. far, them in WWE. We'll start with Nakamura.
You know, he's as good as he's allowed to be. I think he's at his age, you really got to get him up on the main roster in terms of what he is and where he is. I mean, he's achieved what you'd want him to achieve at this point. You know, I'd give him a solid A. You know, I mean, he's got to he's sound bites in his promos, and he's got to hopefully get to that point where he's comfortable enough to thread a few moments of a promo together than a, you know, sound bite. That's not saying you still couldn't utilize him in that current capacity on the main roster and get there eventually. I would, but he's doing great. Samojo's in the same boat. It's like, this guy needs to be called up. This guy needs to be on the main roster. You need them for everything. Look at the depth you have for these shows. You need them, especially when you don't know when the next guy's going to go down and you don't have John Cena full time. All the more reason you need to get this guy up there. And you're serving a few masters, but ultimately you're serving the WWE main roster master more than NXT. As much as that thing is blowing up and it's awesome, you're still serving the main master, which is the main roster. And then I look at AJ Styles. I think he's exceeded all expectations from everyone inside WWE. I think they thought, well, we'll get some good matches. He's a quote-unquote good hand, which is like one of the biggest backhanded compliments someone can say about you. And he's done a great job. And if you look how they even position him, they beat him. They beat him through, you know, the winter and into the spring. Didn't really give you much there. But look where he is in this fall. You know, he's the champion. And I ultimately see him as a babyface. He's so good. He is that. He's kind of a hybrid of a few people I see, you know, a little bit of Brett in there. He doesn't have that flamboyant nature like Sean does, yep. But the finesse in his work is so polished and so good. It's so reminiscent of Sean in that way, but he's got that like kind of, reserved kind of thing going. He's a little bit more outspoken. His promos have gotten better. I wouldn't label him because I think there's so much more that he's going to do. I mean, it's amazing to see this guy at 38, 39, find even greater, just find greatness that we thought maybe, okay, his ceiling's here, but you find out his ceiling's not there. We don't know where his ceiling is. Just let it happen and not label it, because he's going to be fantastic. And gosh, imagine if he hadn't opted out of TNA and had stayed there, what we would have missed out on in New Japan, what we would have missed out on in WWE. But it's also great timing, because you look at what if he had come in, say, 4 or 5 years ago, he probably wouldn't have been called AJ Styles. He probably wouldn't have been the phenomenal one, and he would have lost some of that essence that makes him who he is. But he's doing great, great work. And I look at Seth Rollins, and it's like he's in this weird bizarro land of gray. I think right now more than ever, wrestling is, the fans want gray, but it has to be good gray. This is a weird gray. You know, he's kind of this tweener, and you stay tweener too long, it can be compelling or it can be like half baked. And he's kind of half baked or half pregnant in this current role. It's like he's whining still. It's like the qualities of a babyface aren't quite there. He's not anti-authority in the right way. It's this weird thing. So they got to kind of move off of that, you know. And I think, you know, he's been saddled with, he hurts guys. And I look at him like, yeah, he's really polished. He's really good. And any top wrestler, current or in the past, has always told me, this guy's got it. And I'll take their word over even what my assessment is, because yep. They've been in there. And, you know, it's just that powerbomb move. It's just a tough move. And WWE, it's on them to ban that move. But that's not on him. He's not a reckless guy hurting guys. That's just... You look, that move, you can't, how they teach you how to bump and wrestle, it's like you can't prepare to take that fall because you don't know where you're landing and how you're landing. So that's hard. And I know he's taking a lot of shit for that. And it's a spot I take out, but he's not reckless. You know, the spot sucks in that way. It's a spectacular spot, but it sucks in terms of the potential for bad. But they have a great roster and they're just, you know, going through the growing pains of the brand split. And so, once they hopefully repopulate those two rosters and they continue to introduce talent, we'll see by, you know, January where these rosters are really at. They're still trying to get the tag team divisions going. They got to get the more women on the show and on SmackDown especially. They got great talent. They have more talent coming in. You look at NXT by, say, NXT TakeOver Orlando, you'll have Tommy End in there. You'll have so many guys that are so amazing in that company, in NXT, that by then it'd be all the more reason Samoa Joe should be gone and Nakamura should be gone. But it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. If you look at the champions in WWE, they're phenomenal. They're, pardon the pun, but they really are. And then look at even with TNA, look at Matt Hardy's doing. I mean, it's what Jeremy Borash and Matt Hardy have done is pretty impressive. And you see, like, people are, you know, at the first time I can ever remember a delete chant, a TNA driven created chant in WWE. That's pretty impressive. That tells you what they've been able to conjure up there. I mean, it's positive. So hopefully they can, you know, get their act together. But Matt Hardy's done great things for them, and they have a new regime essentially kind of slowly making their presence felt in the TNA operation. So It's a great time to be a wrestling fan. I just hope all these companies can sustain. You look at some of the boutique companies out there. How are they gonna? What's their purpose, and how do they optimize making money? You know, Lucha Underground is stuck. They have no revenue streams. You know, and that's a problem. And TNA needs to need to stabilize before they even think about revenue streams. They need to get financing and then get revenue streams. And Ring of Honor, they're operating at a level they always have, and it seems to sustain because they have a very conservative business model, and they're very disciplined in there when it comes to the numbers, which is how they've survived. There's so many options today that I remember when wrestling went through that dry spell in the early 90s when I was a kid. I'm like, my God, there's nothing here except for crap. Now, if one thing's not your thing, there's somewhere else you can find it, and it's just a click away. So it's a marvelous time to be a wrestling fan.
Finally, how would you grade the introduction of the cruiserweights on Monday?
Oh, I was so disappointed. Yeah. You know, I think you should. What would you do, Josh? I mean, to me, you showcase, one match, get the personalities over, maybe show the champ, try to put him in the best light he can. If he's weak in one way, then show him in a different way. And to bury them in the show, in that death hour, basically now. It's problematic, and you can't hate on Vince and say, oh, that must have been a Vince move. You know, Vince is he blew his quad out. He's not at the shows. Yes, he's signing off on everything and all that stuff, but the moment to moment stuff, there's a lot more influence now more than ever from people like Triple H and Stephanie. Yet for whatever reason, this segment on the show was just to me in the wrong slot. That's where you put. That's where I would have put it early on when you have all that high energy, and then do something later on the show, do another recap. But I mean, what would you grade it?
I would grade it a C, maybe C minus. You're right. I thought that the fact they didn't have TJ Perkins on the show at all, not even just to come out after the match or anything like that, was strange. I thought beforehand they were going to do some sort of 6-pack challenge just to throw a bunch of guys in there because that seems to be their mentality. I would have done almost like 2 singles matches to qualify for a chance for those 2 guys to then get a shot at TJ Perkins just spice them in throughout the show so you get some more personalities. But I thought they just kind of threw the people out there. The Mick Foley introduction I thought was bad. It was just reading off a card. The fact they didn't highlight the fact that Grand Metalik had actually been in the finals of the Cruiserweight Classic the week before. Yeah. I just thought they were kind of like, what do we do with these guys? And you're right. I think having it earlier in the show, maybe even as the show open, a high energy match to kick off the show and be like, this is how we're introducing these guys right off the bat. There's importance instead of just kind of burying them in a long match that I don't know. My main takeaway from the whole thing was Cedric Alexander, I think, is going to be a pretty big star if they let him.
Oh, yes. And it's so great. He took a risk along with Tommaso.
Yeah.
They were both with me in Ring of Honor. And, you know, you could see they were just being slotted, you know, without purpose, without meaning. And there was great potential there. They clicked with the audience. They connect with the audience. I mean, Tommaso's old great entrance when he'd come out Ring of Honor was so intense. And they left what they had a sure thing. They could have stayed there and kind of been on cruise control for a while. But they took the risk. They opted out and didn't re-up, I guess is the better control. They didn't re-sign. And they could have ended up in no man's land. But they were rewarded for that risk. And I think we're going to follow suit soon because of that. You look at Cedric, what a phenomenal talent. What a feel-good story. I was watching one of his matches this summer, and I just smiled and said, I'm so glad for him. I was genuinely so happy for this guy, and it worked out for him. And the same with Tommaso. See what he's doing with Gargano. Just great watching Gargano, and they have great chemistry. And it's like this team that I was like, at first I felt this is a little awkward, but you see them now, it's like, my God, they're so fun to watch.
Yeah, and I remember getting good advice a long time ago is that the older that you get, if you don't take more chances that scare you, then you're just going to be complacent and not do anything. You're not going to have fun and actually challenge yourself to be better. And it's a great point. I think the fact that they were in some place, quote unquote, safe. And then they said, you know what, I'm going to go outside my comfort zone and go after this. And now look at them. And I think you're right. I think it's going to open the floodgates for more and more guys down the stretch. I know we're out of time, but I want to give you a chance, obviously, to plug the many things you're doing. Obviously people can follow you on Twitter, but where can people interact? MLW Radio, the floor is yours to do a great promo.
All right. Well, everyone check out MLWRadio.com. We have about a billion shows up. Right now, we have a great one called History in the Making, where Matt Farmer, an awesome dude and historian and former pro wrestler, we go back in time into History in the Making, look at some of the big players, big moments in wrestling history. And we're looking at Jack Pfeffer this week, who might be the guy responsible for introducing sports entertainment. He had a very scandalous career. We'll go back in time and look at him. And lots of great content. Ric Flair's on there. He drops a show every Wednesday. Jim Cornette's Thursday. Kevin Sullivan's on Friday, along with Bruce Pritchard and Tama Tonga with the New Japan crew are on Saturday, Eastern Lariat. So we have MVP on there. We have just a ton of guys. And so check us out, MLWRadio.com. And if you want to come out on October 14th to see some great fights, come out to Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York, and you'll get to bump into me. We'll talk. We'll talk shop. We'll talk wrestling, whatever, if I'm not running around because it's a production. But I'd love to see some of you guys. I actually saw some of our listeners, met some of our listeners at our LA shows, and one of them actually ended up, his name was Adam. He actually went from just like, hey, I've never gone to MMA, love hearing your show on wrestling, going to the show, was so inspired by the fights, he actually started training and now is training like every few days in jiu-jitsu out in LA. Wow. So it's like amazing how that worked out. But yeah, so come out October 14th, say hey, I'm there. And had a lot of fun. The show just breezed by. Thank you for having me, Josh.
No problem. And when I have you on again, I want to talk, we'll commit half an hour to just MLW, the promotion itself.
Oh God, no, please, yes, no, please, no.
Look, I was in college, just about graduating, and I was working for 411 Wrestling at the time. And I remember getting emails and seeing this promotion. I'm just like, wow, this seems super interesting. It like completely caught my attention. And there's a lot of questions to ask you about that. So we'll have to talk about that else. So talk about that again sometime, but a big thanks. I know you're a busy guy. Big thanks to Court Bauer for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week. All right. Big thanks to Court Bauer for taking some time. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Like I told you, it's kind of a little like a buffet of just a bunch of different stuff coming at us at once. And I do promise that hopefully 2017 at some point we'll have him back on. We'll talk a little business, but also talk a little bit about MLW, because I really am interested in it, because I remember, like I said, I remember getting the emails back when I was with 411 Wrestling, actually when I was in college. And that was such a unique time for the indies. And it's just everyone, especially like in the Northeast, and this company that was running some shows in Florida, it seemed to be just a direct descendant of ECW. There's just something there in the packaging promotion that it was fascinating. The name itself, everything. So I promise at some point in 2017, I will corral Court and give me some more time and talk about MLW. Again, you can follow him on Twitter, CourtBauer. And easy for me to say. Follow him on Twitter, tell him you heard him on the show, and tell him good job. Tell him to come back. That helps me out too. Let's see. Coming up this weekend, Saturday night, we are in another UFC event. We have 4 straight weeks to go here. And let's see. As I think of that, it is crazy because this is a massive stretch. It's one of those stretches. It felt like, 2014, 2015, when it was just this endless barrage of shows. This is interesting for a lot of reasons. This show coming up on Saturday. Mainly because of what's going on with Cyborg Justino, of course, the women's, I guess you could call her 140-pounder, 145-pounder, whatever you want to call her, as far as a women's fighter, a female fighter for UFC, doesn't really have a division. And the big story this week, as I record this on Thursday afternoon, is that Cyborg is having a tough time, according to reports. Depending on who you believe, she's having a tough time getting down to 140 pounds, which leads to the question, why are they having her fight at 140 pounds if the division doesn't exist? Apparently, she can't make even 141. Apparently, she doesn't get the 1 pound allowance, which is crazy. And just it's time to end this weight class experiment with her. And just either if the weight class doesn't exist, then have her fight at 145 pounds. At least that weight class exists in other organizations. Like, what's the plan here, you know? And I know some people want to hold the steroid thing against her for like forever, but in this case, it is a very bad look. And especially if something was to happen to her, bad weight cut. I mean, she's the headliner of the show. I don't understand what we're doing here. She's fighting a relatively unknown Lena Landsberg in the main event. at the Showdown in Brazil. You can see it on FS1, starting at the main card, starting at 10 p.m. on Saturday night, Eastern Standard Time. Of course, we'll have coverage here on the site. This is a the show has a few names on it. This is, you know, kind of your typical FS1 show in Brazil. There are a few interesting fighters looking up and down the card. Eric Silva, obviously not a prospect at 170 anymore, but he has not looked the same since the USADA testing took over. Physically looks different and is not really performing as well. Juicy Air Formiga fighting on the prelims as well against Dustin Ortiz. At flyweight, Gilbert Burns, who has the attention of some people. Again, kind of, it's one of those things where maybe the prospect label is kind of off him, but there are definitely a lot of people there who are interested in seeing him. How he does, really, we're looking at the top three fights on the show. We're looking at the main event, which is Cyborg Justino against Lena Landsberg. Perhaps UFC's philosophy here is that if Cyborg can't make weight, sorry, if Cyborg is not going to get any competition in cage, maybe she'll get more competition out of the cage. So and it comes in the form of a weight cut. I don't get it. She's a star for them. She doesn't have a division. Do whatever it takes to find her interesting fights and make some money and figure this out. But I have a feeling we're kind of at the crossroads of what they want to do, and we'll see how it turns out. Hopefully she is physically okay and able to go and all that. But this is, I mean, obviously, you know, Justino by complete slaughter is the prediction for Saturday. But we'll see. Maybe this is just their way of trying to even up the odds, which is a pretty effed up thing to say, if that definitely was the case. Co-main event, Henan Barão continuing his campaign at 145 pounds. Looked okay in his featherweight debut, as I bring that up on the Google. It was against Jeremy Stephens, lost by unanimous decision. That was his first fight at 145 pounds in a long time. And that was back in May. He comes back at it at against Philippe Nover, who is back in the UFC. He came back, I believe it was late last year or early this year. He was the guy that... May 2015, so a little over a year. He was the one that obviously he was on Tough and had this buzz. You know, Dana was saying at the time, like, he just reminded me like the Anderson Silva lighter weight classes or something along those lines, which completely screwed him over for the next part of his career. He was out of the UFC. He went 0-3 and then was cut back in February 2010 and then fought on the Indies for a while, fought a couple of shows in Bellator. Finally gets an opportunity back in May 2015, 145 pounds. He's 1-1 since then. He won his first fight back by decision, split decision, and then came back and lost his last fight in December by split decision as well. This seems to be just a showcase, obviously, for Barão to see if he can has any type of drawing power and has anything left at 145 pounds. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how Barão is. There's, you know, a lot of thought there that because of the weight cuts over the years and this thing where people get to a certain point, their body just can't respond like it used to. You know, we are human beings. These fighters are human beings. We tend to forget that. So it'd be interesting to see how he performs. You know, guys that people know, I think that's always valuable, especially a champion that went on a long run like he did. Hopefully he does perform well at 145 pounds to kind of make that a little interesting. If he loses here against Nover, that's not good. Nover's a guy he should beat, and it's going to tell us a lot about the rest of his career and in the short term of the UFC coming up on Saturday night. And finally, heavyweights rounding out the top three fights of the night. Roy Nelson, the guy that on paper, you know, in the old UFC 5-6 years ago, probably would have been cut after some of these losses. Going in there against Bigfoot Silva, another guy that should probably have been cut after some of those losses. These two guys are in one of these fights where, you know, you kind of take a hat, you put a bunch of names in, draw two heavyweight names out, and that's your division. Nelson, I feel like these guys have fought like a bunch of times before. It's one of those fights where you think you've seen it, and I don't think he has. He has not, so that's kind of weird, right? Doesn't it feel like you've seen him, seen these guys fight? So Nelson's coming in this fight. He is he's won one out of his last five, and he has lost. He's won two out of his last one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Won two out of his last eight against Big Nog, who's retired, and Jared Rochalt, who is now out of the UFC. He's coming off a split decision loss against Derek Lewis in a fight that was kind of boring. He really wanted that Derek Lewis rematch, but maybe he has to win this in order to get it. So this is that's kind of where you're at with this one. Bigfoot Silva, 37 years old. He has lost his last two. He has lost four out of his last five and has lost like five out of his last seven. And he lost. This is almost I would say a mercy cut if they cut him. But I mean, you look at these last four losses, actually his last five losses, right? Actually, okay, his last five losses. Cain Velasquez via first round TKO back in May 2013, right? Then he lost that classic fight with Mark Hunt that ended up being a draw because of the elevated testosterone levels. Took a hellacious beating that one. He fought Andre Arlovsky in September 2014, was knocked out in the first round. He fought Frank Mir, February 2015, knocked out in the first round. He fought Solo Pilele, knocked him out in the second round. And then the last two fights, he got TKO'd by Mark Hunt back in November 2015, and then got knocked out by Stefan Struve in just 16 seconds in the first round back in May 2016. So this is a guy that medical records or his sanity would tell you probably should not be fighting, but yet they're putting him in there again. You know, I get it's a fight game, but some of these guys you tend to worry about and think about for the future, like, where is Bigfoot Silva going to be in 10 years? Like, physically, how is he going to be? How are these taking a toll on his body, these beatings? And granted, you know, if UFC cut him, he would try to fight somewhere else. But these things, you know, I fear that 10, 15 years from now, we're going to see some of these guys be like, boy, they should have stopped while they were ahead. And it's tough because a lot of them don't have the bank accounts to do it. It is a sad kind of a side effect of the fight game, but it is what it is. But yeah, we have this one to look forward to on Saturday night, Nelson versus Silva. If Silva gets brutally knocked out again, if you're the UFC, how can you justify keeping him around? If you're another company, how can you justify signing him? Just seems to be a bad decision there. But we'll see what happens Saturday with Silva. Let's see. That's really all the MMA action going around this weekend, unless for some reason there's a pop-up Bellator show or something that I'm forgetting. Interesting Bellator show this past weekend. There was Czech Congo, the former UFC fighter, a main eventer for Bellator many a time over, and seems to pop decent ratings for whatever reason. I don't know if that is a complete coincidence or not. And I know our Paul Fontaine, who does a lot of this ratings work on MMADraws.com and our site, I know he's mentioned obviously a lot of times before how Congo is one of those guys that draws well. Joe Warren, who was in the co-main event, he actually won his fight, so he still stays around. I saw a story that he was, he was having some financial troubles paying stuff for his wife and kids and all that stuff. And you hate to hear that stuff. And these guys are in their late 30s and they have no money to show for it. It's just like, what? It's so sad. It's something we all kind of know about the way that MMA and the fight game works. But it is just, it's sad to hear that stuff, man. It really is. And then on the, you know, I almost said Anastasia. Who is the Bellator woman, as you guys are yelling at me because you know who it is? It's Anastasia Yankova. She fought on the second fight into the show and seems to be, you know, I realize there's promotion and I realize that Bellator is trying to get over their own people as stars. I think they're trying a little bit too hard with Yankova to make her out to be like the next Ronda Rousey. She didn't make weight. The fight was rock'em sock'em for a while. Not exactly a lot of technique involved, I guess you could say. Just is kind of like, you know, grip and rip, sling them, just go at it. And they're really trying to make her out to be this amazingly attractive, also a badass, which, again, the UFC just kind of organically, it happened with Rousey in the UFC and Strikeforce before that. But obviously, it felt more natural. This seems to be more forced. The rating was good. She doesn't really have like a big Twitter following or anything. It just feels like they're really making a hard press with her. But it just, to me, just, I don't know, there's nothing really hitting there. It feels like they're trying to make something out of it that really isn't there. She won a tight split decision. She wants to have a rematch in that fight. And we'll see what happens next time. They seem to be grooming her for big stuff. I don't think they actually have any women's belts there anymore, if I remember right. So we'll see kind of what happens there. My bullshit meter is up on some of the promotion with some of these fighters. They seem to be having they got their Conor McGregor now in Chael Sonnen. They have their Ronda Rousey, they think, and Anastasia Yankova. And I guess who would be their John Jones? Liam McGarry, when he talks inside the cage, a lanky 205er inside the cage as a champion. They have their guy there, their John Jones-esque guy. Out of the cage, obviously a lot different. But and then I guess we'll figure out what's going on with this heavyweight division at some point. This is so weird. It's just taking so long for a lot of these things. Too many shows. I wish they do less stuff, but we talked about that ad nauseum before. So with all that said, we'll give you your weekend back. Thank you for stopping by. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. Thanks for all the compliments and kind words about last week's show with Mike Sempervivi. That was a lot of fun. If you haven't heard that yet, you can go back into the archives and listen. If you are a subscriber, you can listen to all previous 50 shows on our website. Just go to radio shows. You can search for, you'll see Josh Nason's Punch out there, and you can actually just look and look at all, get all the past shows, all the great guests we've talked to, from Jack Encarnacion to Chuck Mendenhall to Jeremy Botter to Graham Cawthon to Brandon Howard to all these other people I'm forgetting that we've had on. John Anik's been on the show. So you can go back and listen to all those shows in the archives and enjoy those at your leisure. And with all that being said, thank you to Court Bauer. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're on the road to 100, everyone. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.